Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Takecast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter, at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, we do not deliver a football episode. Rich Rebar from RotoWorld.com and I rank our five best sports-centered episodes of The Simpsons over all 30 years of the show, though, spoiler alert, a lot of these episodes are in the first 10 or 11 seasons of the show. So this is not a football episode. This is not even really a sports episode. This is really more of a pop culture episode. If you guys want more episodes like this, please give me the feedback. It's definitely something that we are interested in doing here at The Takecast. You know, the idea for this podcast was never for it to be just a sports podcast or just a culture podcast or just a lifestyle podcast or just a Bitcoin podcast. You know, I wanted to cover what the listeners wanted to. So if you guys enjoy this, please let me know. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can leave a rating and review on iTunes, and you can get bonus episodes of the show on patreon.com/Takecast. We are presented by DailyRoto.com and RotoExperts.com. You can save 20% on your DFS advice by buying the RotoExperts NFL 365 package for $40 for $39.99, or you can just get 10% off the NFL 365 package with projections, dynasty rankings, and best ball tools, all powered by the Daily Roto projection engine. And you can get 10% off using the promo code MATIC. And now we will get into the episode. Hello, everyone. Bringing in Rich Rebar to the podcast. He's already been on an episode of The Takecast, a pretty well-received one. But now that we are in peak off-season Twitter, Rich and I thought that we would combine for one of our favorite topics. We are going to be ranking the best sports episodes of The Simpsons. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Davis, man, it's good to be back. You know, I don't really engage a lot in off-season Twitter. I tend to kind of Swayze, ghost a little bit after the season, recharge the batteries for a lot of the reasons of why we're doing this podcast. You know, I'd go on and there's just a lot of nonsense on there. It's a good time to take a break. Guys are doing like Disney drafts and stuff like that. So this is me getting all that out of my system here and giving some peak off-season content of running down these Simpsons episodes. So we talked about The Simpsons last time I was on this podcast, and, you know, kind of how I grew up with it. It's Simpsons have existed your entire life. You've never had a year on Earth.
Longer than my entire life. They are about to enter into season 30 and 31. There will be Simpsons on the air for the next 2 years. So The Simpsons is actually older than me.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, we talked about how I grew up with it, and, you know, I kind of got out around, like, season, you know, I want to say like 13, 14-ish is when I kind of like tailed off, and I would watch an episode here or there. If someone told me like, oh, Simpsons was great this week, I would go back and watch it. But other than that, I really trailed off around that time. So we're going to be focusing in, at least for me, on episodes in that peak prime Simpsons area of, like, you know, seasons 2 through like 12-ish. So if someone's a late Simpsons fan and they're coming in here in this episode and say, well, you guys missed this episode in season 19. I mean, I apologize in advance.
They've always done a lot of sports episodes because Matt Groening really likes baseball, but a lot of the writers, the early writers, they really liked football, but like over like the last 10 years or so, not been a ton of football centric episodes. They did, you know, they did their Moneyball parody in, I think season 17. They did, you know, mostly baseball centric episodes, which, you know, the best Simpsons sports episode is baseball centered, but I wish that there were more football shows.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of good ones, I think, on our list. We actually didn't even like come up with like a format for this or anything, really. We just kind of like gave our list, and there was a good amount of overlap. So we're just going to, I think, run in that direction. I don't really know. You're the host.
Well, we have a couple honorable mentions, and then I have a ranking here on my agenda sheet. And okay, we're going to go through these episodes. We're going to, maybe your ranking will be different and then we'll go over, you know, some of the plot points. I actually, if you guys really like this episode, one, Pat Mayo really wants to do a best Simpsons episodes ever podcast, so that will probably be coming. But also, I would encourage you guys to go and listen to the Talking Simpsons podcast. It's on iTunes or wherever, which is what inspired me to do this, because that's one of my absolute favorite ones. Honorable mention, though, I have Sunday Cruddy Sunday, which was Homer and Barney and Moe. They get counterfeit tickets to the Super Bowl. Not a super memorable episode in the overall hierarchy, but definitely one that I remembered watching.
Yeah, that one was a fringe one for me, too. That one has a good meta John Madden and Pat Summerall closeout on their way out the door. What's interesting about that one is that there's actually, like, really no football in it.
No.
They have, like, all these guests, and there's, like, nothing about the game. Like, Dolly Parton's episode, there's no, like, singing this. They have a real meta joke about that at the end. It's like, well, we had all these guests, there's no football or anything really about the Super Bowl in it. That was Fred Willard is like the celebrity guest on that one too. He plays a real good character. That one was a fringe one on my list as well.
Yeah, they get Troy Aikman in there, they get Dan Marino in there, and no action shots at all.
Yeah, I had one of my fringe ones too for honorable mention was Bart Starr, and it was that one is heavily football induced. That one kind of has like the good corollary too. If you're a son that played for your dad, and your dad was the coach in sport, you had that dynamic going on. You had the Abe, you know, ruining Homer's gymnastics career. Like, and it's the first time Marge sees Homer ever in life. Is she's like, ooh, who's that guy, the top gymnast? And, you know, Abe ruins them, like, you know, his sports moment, you know, as a youth. And like, he's kind of just ruining Bart's moment. That episode's really good, too. I don't know if that one made your list at all.
That one made the honorable mention. There's a surprise visit from Joe Namath. He shows up. But actually, I was the quarterback of all of my flag football teams, and my dad was my coach until it became clear that I was never going to be tall enough to play quarterback at like a tackle football level, which was that was a brutal realization for me that I was never going to be able to be tall enough to be a quarterback.
And you know what's interesting about that too is when they have Bart, because you know the Simpsons long running have never really steered into like Bart being like a jock or like an athlete at all.
He's fat. That's when they make the Bart is fat jokes, you never really think about it. And then you look and you're like, wow, that kid in real life, that kid would weigh 200 pounds.
There's only really a couple times where they tried to make him like out of the box athlete. And it's an episode. There's one of the episodes they do. We'll talk about is on our list for overlap, I think, for being a top five episode. But in here, they really swerve into him just being terrible and him acknowledging how terrible he is. You know, and Homer, first thing he does is benches Nelson, who's like the star quarterback. Like at one point, like he just calls like a play where he just throws the ball to himself, Bugs Bunny style, like throws a touchdown to himself. You know, Bart doesn't even want to be the quarterback, and they make he'd be the quarterback, but he's just like a terrible athlete, like in all these throughout like Simpsons history.
Yeah, no, he's not athletic, and I guess you'll notice that as the show goes on, they just have to force characters into more and more uncomfortable scenarios, you know. And they always thought they were going to be canceled. Like at the end of every season, they always thought that was going to be the last one. Like when Homer goes to Deep Space Homer, they like, which I believe is a season 5 episode. They were like, oh, the show's going to be over soon. In season 5. So they sent Homer to outer space. So that's kind of when you watch through the whole catalog of The Simpsons, that's an explanation as to why, you know, the characters are doing things that are not within their normal behaviors, because they were like, well, we can change these characters. The show's not going to last that long.
Yeah, and Bart was a character they early on, like when it started, you know, the show was initially like all their merchandise thing we talked about last time was really Bart-centric. You know, all the shirts and gear and stuff that was really Bart-forward, and, you know, the other characters ended up shining, and the show really hit its stride when they started to be like more Homer-centric and stuff like that when they moved on. So, like, Bart was really a character that they really found new ground with as they went on, you know, and kind of diverted the show just from being Bart-centric from the start that they initially planned.
What are some of your favorite types of episodes? Like, do you like just like the joke after joke after joke episodes, or I kind of like the episodes that are about Lisa. I find those episodes to be more based in reality, and like those could be live action shows. Honestly, but I find those to be some of their best episodes.
Well, obviously, I mean, Lisa, anything that they revolve around her, it's easy for them to have episodes that stayed evergreen because, you know, they were progressive episodes. She's a progressive character. And, you know, you look back on it, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, these are still problems now in the world.
Right, yeah.
So it's really easy for a lot of, at least episodes, when you rewatch them as an adult, to remain ever because of her character, what her character's background is, and her functionality on the show, just because of the world we live in. I also like episodes, I think Lisa works a lot better too when her and Bart team up.
Yes.
When you have episodes where Lisa and Bart are working together, even though we're gonna have one episode for sure, like I said, on here, spoiler alert, that where they definitely don't work together until the very
right.
end. But I think that those are the best episodes when they are working together instead of just, being, at a yin and yang.
Dead Putting Society, that's a very early episode, but that was one of my favorites just because that's the sort of the introduction of the Ned versus Homer rivalry. And also, I'm clearly a sucker for any golf related episode. The episode, the Country Club episode where Mr. Burns and Homer golf against each other and Smithers cheats for Burns, that's a very good one as well.
Yeah, I love Dead Putting Society. I mean, because that's when you first get the background of really what is Homer's character versus Ned's character. I mean, the reason Homer is legitimately like so shitty to Flanders like throughout like the course of the show is that like he's everything that Homer isn't. It's why it's easy to swallow Homer's like hatred of him, and blind hatred, and just how he just literally shits on him like throughout the course of the show, because he is a great dad. He's a good father, a husband, a positive role model, active participant in the community, all those things. And that Dead Putting Society really gives you the driving force of their relationship and why Homer like feels that ire towards him, it drives the whole plot of that show, that episode. I think it's a season 2 or 3 episode too. It's really early on, but that really sets that background of their relationship and I did dynamic later on, where he's just blatantly out of left field just mean to Flanders for no reason. You get where that character background comes from.
There's also an introduction of Lisa's interest in like Eastern spirituality and meditation. She tries to help Bart meditate and become Zen to be better at putting, which that becomes like a big thing with Lisa more in like seasons 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you don't get a lot of Todd Forward episodes too. So having Todd.
Yeah, though, and I believe in this episode they're actually backwards. I think Todd is the younger one and Rod is the older one, but in this episode it's actually they like reverse past them. Yeah. Hope someone got fired for that blunder.
No, I mean they do some continuity gaps in the history of the show, but when you're on for 30 years, that'll happen.
Well, now, most recently, they just, like, if they feel like doing an episode, like, in the 90s or something, they'll just completely change Homer and Marge's story of, like, how they met. Like, there was an episode where Homer was basically Kurt Cobain, and he, like, invented grunge rock in, like, 1992, and that was how they met. They just completely changed things up just to make episodes. Do you have any other honorable mentions before we get into the rankings?
No, the two I had that were fringe were Sunday Cruddy Sunday and then Bart Starr. So those are the two that just didn't like make my top five that like I sent you.
So our first, or I guess fifth on the list, one of my personal favorites, but it's not the strongest episode overall. Lisa the Greek, episode 49 of the show, directed by Rich Moore, written by Jay Kogan and Wallace Wolardowski. A great episode because it's about football gambling.
Yeah, definitely. And this was one I had, and I was surprised. Because, it's not one that, you see, like, would make, like, a lot of lists for, like, people's favorites. But you could see why it made ours, the football gambling background.
Right.
I love the open of this, where Homer's basically, watching, all these, sports honks, to buy the packages, buy my betting packages. They've got that smooth Jimmy Apollo character. I love how he just comes out and lays it out. He's, I'm right 52% of the time. And he's, what's the bet? It's like Denver versus New England.
It's Cincinnati versus Miami. And Jimmy gives Cincinnati as his stone cold lock, and then he changes the channel and another tout gives Miami as his stone cold lock.
Yeah, and even before that, though, Homer's watching him, and he's today's game versus Denver and New England is too close to call. But if you're one of those compulsive gambling types, I don't know, Denver. And, like, Homer calls in on Mo, and he's like, you know, $50 on Denver, and they lose, like, 55-10. And Homer flips back, and they show, like, the Jimmy Pyle kicker. He's like, well, when you're wrong 48% of the time. Like, he's
you know, it's like making fun of tout culture, but like 1989 tout culture. And the reason that that the guys who write this show know so much about this is they were actually all compulsive gamblers. They all loved it. George Meyer, Wolodarski, Kogan, Al Jean, Sam Simon, and James L. Brooks, they all would run like a football betting pool against each other in the Simpsons writing room.
Yeah, it's just speaks so much. You hear it so much in our analysis too, you know, especially because we're always process over results. And, you know, it's like, hey, 48% of the time, you know, that line just really sticks at me when they come back to it. It's just like, oh, that was all right. Because it's all right, I lost, you know. It's just real funny to me. You know, this was my first year really in sports betting, you know, as it got legalized last year. Roto World had a push content, and I wrote a column with Ray this year on sports betting and making picks. It was the first year I really delved into that world outside of just betting a few games. Like, you know, I would just bet a game here or there. I really went for the background and, like, tried to apply, like, my approach to fantasy analytics to it. And the trends in betting football games is completely different than fantasy. And I had a blast with it, but that edge, and I know you did really well, and maybe you could help me. I ran at 56% for the picks in Roto World, and I was like, man, is this even worth it? Like, is this even worth, like, am I getting, like, a real edge here, you know, playing? Ran at like 60%.
I ran at 60% and then the last week of the year, I think I ended the year at 58% on the Fantasy Pros, you know, accuracy challenge or whatever. And I will say that I found it easier at the beginning of the year and harder towards the end of the year. And I don't know if that is a result of the Lions becoming more efficient. Probably I was just running a little bit over expectation. I find football against the spread to be, I've done pretty well historically speaking. Like, it's been an area that I've done pretty well, but certainly I don't bet every game. Like, there might be two games a week that I feel really strong about. And I think, you know, with all of the coverage now that sports betting is legalized and, you know, the reversal of the Wire Act and everything, people will be giving their opinions on like a lot of games, even if they only feel strongly about two or three. And most models built to beat lines, you know, they're probably only going to see a bettable line, you know, once a week, twice a week.
Yeah, I had a real curious time of, you know, basically divorcing the logic of football to betting. You know, when you have like these trends to bet, you know, oh, we've got a road team, you know, off of overtime, but the only way to get that edge is to play that situation all season long, you know, to get like, you know, your 60-65% edge. But then you're like betting teams like the Bills. You're like, I remember telling my buddy, I was like, you got to bet the Bills this week. He's like, fuck, I'm going to bet the Bills this week. Like, hell no. Yeah. It's like, early in the season, I remember just being on the Cardinals for like a month straight. Like, they were just like hot. Like, they were the team that were just like, trend said, you got to bet the Cardinals this week. You got to bet the Cardinals again this week. And it's like, every week, it's like, shit, I got to bet the Cardinals. Like, you know, you just that be able to divorce your football logic from your wallet is hard to do. But, you know, it's the only way to get those edges are to play those situations off the course of the season. Whereas playing like a different edge in like fantasy is completely different, where it's definitely more individual player based and you're taking context of what's happening on the field instead of playing situations. And I thought that just dynamic of betting was really intriguing and really made football a lot of fun this year for me.
The main thing I would do is I would bet, you know, 14 or more point dogs and then home dogs. Those would be the scenarios where I would just, like, regardless of who the teams are, I would just be likely to bet those.
Yeah, I ended up having a lot of fun this football season because of it, though, and not just because of, oh, I'm going to watch this Thursday night game because I have a bet on it. You know, more from the context of, you know, I found myself not only rooting for my picks and the picks that I was using to my own money, you know, to play, but these situations that were so, like I said, divorced from football logic that you're rooting for because you wanted to be right on those picks. Like, you know, like, I said, I bring up the Bills one that just sticks in my mind. It was the Bills played the Titans in Buffalo, and it was just off the Titans played the Eagles and beat the Eagles in overtime. And you're just like, and the Bills were just terrible at the time. Like, I think they might not even had a win at the time. And they were just like such an awesome bet, like when it happened. Like, no one wanted, everyone was like taking the Titans. Public was hammering the Titans. Everyone was taking the Titans. It's like having that situation pop. and being on the right side was such a gratifying feeling early season. That just like opened up a whole Pandora's box to gambling throughout the rest of the year for me.
Yeah. There's also some good Troy McClure in here. For people who don't know, Troy McClure, one of the best characters on The Simpsons ever, unfortunately was only on, I think, the first 9 seasons of the show because Phil Hartman, the actor who played him, was murdered by his wife in real life. But the Troy McClure here, he's playing Jack Handel, a retired cop who shares an apartment with a retired criminal, the original Odd Couple, which, of course, not the Odd Couple, which I believe was parodying some people who are famous in your day who had to make sitcoms just because the IRS was after them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he was so great on SNL, too.
It was
really a bummer in our youth when he passed away. He was one of, like, the hallmarks of SNL at the time. So that was a bummer. This episode to me too, as a parent, really resonates as well, because this is, you know, we're going to have like a running theme of like a lot of bad Homer episodes. And
yeah, jerk ass Homer, as people call him, is pretty prevalent in these episodes.
Yeah. And it's a bummer because he comes like, this is where he exists. He's going to exist in a lot of these episodes. I mean, Homer, like he kind of embodies the best and worst of like qualities of American life. It's like, what is character like basically is like obnoxious, he's lazy, impulsive, never really learns from anything he does, but he also has this kind of like fundamental, you know, decency about him, like almost like an innocence, like he, you know, he always comes through at the end when you need him to. You know, he always comes up short and everything else, but does come through when we kind of need him to. But he really only takes an interest in his kids, like in any episode, like if it's going to benefit him. That's what the dynamic we have here. And like, I find this as like a parent, like, you know, to be like totally true. I don't really hadn't experienced this with myself, with my dad. Even like now, he doesn't like care about anything I do. He's, what do you do for a living? Like, you know, I almost can't like tell my like any family, like explain to him what I do, like at any function.
Right. Right.
Like predictive analysis, something like that. Like, this is what we do. You know, if I say anything about football, then I'll just get like a bunch of questions that are just like really like dumb and non-topical about football. As a parent, like I find like get the most out of my kids when I engage with them, you know, the stuff that they are into. And you know, I might not be into it, but if, you know, you just really get into what your kids are into, I mean, you get a lot more out of them as a parent. You know, I talk to my son when he comes home from school and I'm like, how's school? What'd you do? And just everything's like a 3-word answer. But like if we're playing like a game of Madden and he forgets like I'm his dad, like he'll talk to me about all the stuff, like, you know,
right,
as like a peer to peer. And, you know, just my daughter's the same way. She's a little too young to get anything tangible out of, but, you know, obviously my 14-year-old, you know, try to get into his world and try to be at the age where we don't divert, you know, where our main part of his life, and, you know, definitely being involved in stuff with him, even if it's not something I always want to do, is where I get the most out of him. And you know, that's where you have the crux of this episode. It's how it starts. You know, Lisa runs up to Homer and has the Malibu Stacy diorama. She makes like a shoebox house because, you know, this is, you know, they don't have money, and he's just like, I don't give a shit, get out of here. Can't connect. And she comes in after Homer takes a bath in that bet that we talked about, and he's just like, pick the next game, and she picks it and it wins. And it opens up like this whole relationship of like, oh, I can connect with my dad now. He's taking interest in me. And that's like
right,
how the show avalanches into the story.
And he has to explain gambling is a way to make good things even better, which is pretty perfect.
Yeah, and that part is great too. You know, it's like what could be, you know, more exciting? She actually has the line in it. She's like, what could be more exciting than a savage ballet that is pro football? And he's like, you know, gambling makes everything better. Yeah, it's like the ice cream analogy.
Yeah. So the next episode we have is Lisa on Ice, which is, this is real jerk-ass Homer, because he, like, basically, when he realizes that that Lisa is better than Bart, he's just like, why wasted all this time on you? Like, oh, man, it cuts real deep. And I actually learned that this was inspired kind of by a real-life thing that was happening in the 90s. The Florida Panthers had a female goalie on their roster who played 2 exhibition games for them.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. I thought it was more at the time, I don't know if you remember this. Well, you probably were, because you were into sports as a kid. In the early 90s, Fox actually got the NHL.
Got hockey, and they had the glowing puck.
Yeah, do you remember that? They had the dumbass blue puck, the trail. Like, dudes would take, like, a slap shot, and it'd be like, sew, and, like, it'd have the thing. And they had the glowing puck. They really tried to ramp it up for people to watch hockey on TV. I mean, I grew up in an area where there was no hockey, so it wasn't, like, a sport that I was really into on the pro level.
Yeah, I watched a ton of hockey growing up. Like, that was actually probably the main sport I watched with my dad, because the Colorado Avalanche were our team and they were really good for like the first 12 years of my life.
But hockey, like, Fox got hockey and they were making like a huge push. Like, they did all these commercials. They had like everything. I remember as a kid, like, they really tried to ramp up, you know, being an NHL. I think they'd only had it. They ended up losing it pretty quickly. I think they had it for less than a decade.
They did not have it for very long. Yeah, it moved to CBS and ESPN, I think.
Yeah, they did not. It did not work out, the glowing puck. Who would have known?
No, and when I was researching this episode, I saw like a bunch of like YouTube clips of like the promotions that they would do, and they'd have like fiery explosion, like all the sorts of things you would see on a TV show making fun of TV Fox was actually doing to promote the NHL. And I kind of think that maybe Fox directed them to do an episode about hockey, which ended up in Lisa on Ice, because it was their big thing at the time.
Yeah, maybe, like you said, they just borrowed from what was topical at the time. I did not know about that. I don't remember that at all, actually, and be living through it, like the female
there
goalie.
There is more sports gambling in this one as well. Mo is the bookie. And is taking bets on this game between Lisa and Bart's team.
Yeah, when you get to the end, you have, like, you talk about Homer and jerk-ass Homer. He is so prevalent in this episode, not only between the two kids. He has the moment where he tells Marge, like, which one are you going to cheer for? He's like, I want to see you fighting. He's like, tell both kids I want to see you fighting for parents love. Yeah, he tells Bart, I wasted all this time on you. In the locker room, like, he has like a big speech to the kids, like, so Lisa is like obviously a female in the locker room, and then just goes after Uter, like, just chases him out, makes fun of how fat he is. It's very prevalent in this episode. Do you have any like parent experiences of like being like a terrible parent, like vicariously trying to like drive one of your friends through sports?
My parents were pretty cool about sports. My dad, when I was probably up until I was about 12, when everyone else just got bigger than me, I was a good athlete. I was fast, and the sport I was best at was soccer, though, and my dad didn't play soccer at all growing up, so he didn't really know how to be an over-competitive soccer dad, just because he didn't really understand the sport. But I used to do skateboarding competitions, because that was what, after I realized I wasn't going to get tall enough, that's what I started to do. And my dad would try and give me, you know, pep talks and, you know, sporting advice for skateboarding, and it just never really worked. But neither of my parents were jerk asses like Homer was. Like, they never rode me too hard. They were kind of hippies, you know. They were kind of free to be you and me sorts of parents. What about you?
I'm in that world now. I didn't have it personally, because I was like always just like the adequate like player to like some, if I could, like, you know, everyone always thinks they're better than what they really were in hindsight, and like I was just like an adequate player. Like, I was like a dude that like I was never the cause of losing the game or winning the game. I was
you were just along for the ride.
Yeah, I was like, I like wasn't terrible, but like wasn't like good either, and like never tried to like make it into anything. But my son, like I said, I have a 14-year-old son, and he's at the age in baseball now where he's still playing, but like knows he's not gonna like play like college baseball or make, like, he's playing for fun at this point because he likes to do it. But you know, we're at the crust where like a lot of parents are like really trying to drive their kids to play. You know, like,
yeah.
So like we're really on like that edge, and you see it in a lot of parents. It's like, dude, your kid hates baseball, but like you see it, and like you're like, God, this kid hates being here so much, and his parents make him. It's I'm really at that. We're really at that age now, like where this kid's just like, you know, fuck this, man. I'd rather be playing Fortnite or doing something else. Like, I want
all the kids would rather be playing Fortnite.
So like we're right at that age. But, like, my son's not really there, and I never really pushed sports on my son. He wasn't into it. But like, because a lot of people know like me through like Twitter, and probably why you even had me on the show, like I was always into like pop culture, and I'm like a full-fledged nerd on my own. My son like was first into like Star Wars and stuff like that, and I was like, well, that's cool if he's not into sports, because I like all this other stuff too, like comics and everything. And then like he found sports on his own and like really just clicked. And I was like, all right, cool. We got this too. And found it. But he never, like, as an athlete was like, I want to play like sports and really take it. Baseball is the only thing. And he's at the line now, or even he's like self-cognizant to know like, I'm going to do this for like 2 more years. Once I hit high school, probably not make the team.
Yeah. Which is a pretty healthy attitude to take.
Yeah. And so the other thing in this episode too is the reason that Lisa has to play hockey is to find out she's getting an F in gym.
In gym, yeah.
And like, do you have like any like gym like callbacks, like gym?
Oh, man,
because gym is so different for everyone.
Depending on high school. So I love gym because I didn't have competitive athletics in high school, right? Like I was just like, I'm too short. I'm not good enough. I'm not going to try and do any of this, but I'm still just like by nature, like a competitive person. So I wanted to play, you know, dodgeball, kickball. Our sport that our high school did was called mat ball, which was basically like a combination of baseball and kickball using the whole gym. And it was like, it was amazing. That was like that was the highlight of my week when we got to play mat ball in gym. So I actually loved gym in high school.
Yeah, we had it too. And we used to play, you know, the dodgeball where you could, it wasn't just two halves where like they would blow a whistle and you can go like foul line to foul line. Like you'd end up peeking like behind and crossed over. And like, that was so much fun.
Yeah,
now they have these trampoline parks and you go and, we had my son's birthday at a trampoline park a couple years ago, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go in and just wreck these kids in dodgeball, like Billy Madison. It's going to be like the scene from Billy Madison. I'm just going to like destroy these kids. I think I even have an old tweet about it. Dude, I went in there, and like every kid was throwing like 70 miles an hour, and like it was like Vlad Guerrero like throwing dudes out from the right field corner at third base. I was like, I felt so overwhelmed. I was like, oh, no. I was like, this is the end of my life and existence. It basically put me into like just a stupor. I think I didn't even come out of my room for like a week after that dominated by these kids in dodgeball.
I wonder what gym is like now for these kids.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really do like a whole lot. Like they do like mostly like PE stuff, like the training, like the circuit stuff, like from what I get, like, you know,
makes sense,
the circuit, like the running and stuff like that. But this one too is there's a great B story too in this episode at the beginning that they just totally leave alone. There's a Bart like goes outside like in his pajamas, and there's this great line where like Jimbo is like, nice Simpson, or he's like a nice PJ Simpson. He's like, did your mom buy them for you? And he's like, kind of, he's like, looks at him, he's like, yeah, who else?
Yeah, what? Who else would?
He's like, you win this round, Simpson. That line's so good.
The bullies are always like Jimbo Kearney Nelson, but they're always really good, like in general when they choose to use them. This episode was also directed by Bob Anderson and written by Mike Scully. And you'll go and you'll notice in all of the kid-centered episodes, all the really good Lisa and Bart episodes, they're always written by Mike Scully because he was the only one of these, like the whole writing crew, who was a father. Like, none of the rest of them had kids.
It's interesting, too, this episode ends the same way that Dead Poetic Society ends, just with Bart and Lisa instead of Bart and Todd.
Yeah.
Like, he basically doesn't take the last shot. And where you know, Simpsons always does, like, sports goofs. So, like, the clock's, like, still running during his penalty shot. Like, and it, like, runs out.
Oh, yeah.
The game ends.
Yeah. They can't be too hyper realistic. The next episode, third episode on our list, The Homer They Fall. This is the episode where we realize that Homer basically has a helmet inside of his head. This was actually a season 8 episode. So now we are to Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein. And this is how long The Simpsons have been on. Oakley and Weinstein, before they were writers for the show, they were fans of the show. And now they're in charge. They are the showrunners. So these episodes generally have like, there's just going to be a ton of references in these.
Yeah. This one too is at the time, because this one they basically swerve in. It's like a Don King, Mike Tyson episode. But it's real good too, because it's like, you know, the allegory here is like, you know, escaping your past, like past glories, you know, and confronting the ghost of your past. And it's actually Mo is the character that drives that. You know, it's not actually Homer, even though he's the, you know, the catalyst for it. You know, they basically have it where Mo is like this great, like old boxer. And he's no longer a boxer. Like he talks about what was his name? Do you remember it?
Yeah, they called me Kid Gorgeous. Then they called me Kid Acceptable. Then finally they called me Kid Mo.
The Kid Presentable.
Yeah, Kid Presentable. That was it.
Kid Presentable. And he's like, What stopped you from like being a boxer? And he's like, I got knocked out 40 times in a row. That in politics. That in politics, like, called me out of it. It's so good. But he drives it too. And then you find out too, like, he has like an office with all this old nostalgia of him being like a boxer. And it's actually in the ladies' restroom because, like, obviously, like, he's like,
no lady would go into most.
But he like brings Homer into the ladies' restroom and they like have a sit down, and that's when like the Don King character comes in to get the fight. But yeah, and it's also too you know, at the time, like, it's more of the CTE episode too, you know, where like Homer's just basically like the Rocky thing. Like, they tried to have him not even be a boxer. Like, their game plan is like, just go in there and just like have the dude just wail on you over and over and over and over again. And you can just push him over. That's like their game plan.
Yeah. And the writer for this episode, Jonathan Collier, big boxing fan. And they kind of knew that they would get some flack for this episode. So they really try and drive home the fact that Homer is, you know, he's impenetrable. And actually, right before this episode, they have the episode where Homer is a circus freak and he's repeatedly getting cannonballs to the stomach.
Yep.
So basically, the moral of the show is that Homer is indestructible. He just can't die.
And we just said that the open to this episode is amazing too. This is where they're in like the mall. They have like a bonanza reunion where like only like two people are still alive.
Still alive.
Which plays into, like I said, harping on the past. But Bart buys like this utility belt from one of these from one of the stores. It's actually the comic dude's trying to return it, and he buys it off him for cash. And he calls it the tactical retaining system. It's like a Batman belt, but does all this stuff. And the bullies again make an appearance, and they're chasing him down at the next day in school, trying to beat him up and take it. And he's like trying to run away. It's like turn signals, like the and everything. And as a last ditch resort, like, they're trying to beat him up and take this belt, he like pushes the emergency button and it pops out like this parachute, and it says, call the police, assistance needed. And then he just like kind of looks at them. He's like, well, you heard him, call the police.
Call the police. Bart getting bullied in general is pretty great, just because he is such a little, like, I mean, really, at the end of the day, Bart, his primary character, he's a big mama's boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He always is running to Marge for help, and they actually got Michael Buffer to do the Let's Get Ready to Rumble. That's actually him, because you have to get Michael Buffer. You'll get super suit. You do the Let's Get Ready to Rumble and it's not Michael Buffer.
So this was peak like Tyson, the last like reign, like him trying to be like a boxer again was at the time.
Yeah, he'd just gotten out of jail, right?
Yeah, and they bring up the character Dredrick Tatum. You know, he comes out of prison. The commercial is hilarious too. But they have like a press conference, so like they're gonna fight, and he's like, they talked about him fighting Homer. He's like, I think he's a good man. I like him. He's like, I got nothing against him, but I'm definitely going to make orphans of his children. It's just like, yeah. And he's like, how do you know? He's like, do you know that they do have a mother, you know, right, champ? And he's like, yeah, but I imagine she'd die also of grief.
They also have the Don King parody. They have Lucius Sweet in there, who does a very good impersonation. I guess it's someone named Paul Winfield is the guest appearance. I don't know if he might be like an SNL guy or something.
Yeah, and they do, like I said, it's just so ridiculous in how exaggerated it is. You talk about Homer being impenetrable. Like, there's they also like really like critique, you know, sanctioned violence pretty good on here. Basically, like, they want like Homer to die, basically. At one point, you know, like, he's just like getting like crushed in the fight. At one point too, like, and then he's like Mo flies in like on like a fan, like a fan system that like a guy,
yeah, from up above.
Yeah, and like Michael Buffer literally, like, I think has a phrase like, whatever dignity remained in boxing is literally flying out the window. during it. Oh, it's so good.
I thought this episode was very good. Like, it's a very good episode of TV, but I did not live in a world where boxing was important. If you're 24, 25, 26, you've not, like, the biggest boxing fight of my life was Mayweather-McGregor.
Oh, God, that's sad.
But like, I can't think of any other boxing. Like, people know who Manny Pacquiao is, but it's not like, I don't think that permeates the consciousness really the way that a Tyson fight would have.
Yeah, I mean, I was a youth at this time, but we never bought the fights, like the big heavyweight fight at this time, you know, when Tyson was big, and then, you know, Holyfield and Lennox Lewis, like those were that was like the last grasp of like heavyweight boxing, you know, when it was like big and mainstream. But like the best fighters of like when I was growing up were like the middleweight dudes, you know, like Bernard Hopkins, De La Hoya, like those guys. But yeah, I never really got heavy into boxing, just like when there was a big fight and like my friends would get it when I was older, I'd latch on and watch that way. But yeah, boxing was never like a huge part of my life.
It's like too barbaric now. It's just too barbaric to be a big national thing. Like UFC, I guess, has taken the place of it. But even, I mean, I don't know. I've never watched a UFC fight start to finish. People do love it.
I only watch it when like pop culture says I have to, and like my friends have it or something. It's not something I'm into. I'm on UFC DFS.
I've never played it. People say it's beatable though.
Yeah. I mean, I figured if it was just beatable, you would just suck it up and play anyway.
I don't know if there are like good projections for it though. Basically, like I'm sure there are. I just don't know who has them. But if there were good projections, I would play it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, are there good projections for fighting?
Yeah. Good projections for fighting. Second to our top episode, Team Homer. This is a great one because of Monty Burns. Burns is the best Simpsons character. Not even close. Easily. He is the best.
Easily.
Yeah, easily. So in this episode, basically, they need someone to pay for their bowling league. And actually, this is a really relatable experience. You go bowl. You're with your family. You're with your friends, whatever. You decide you're going to go bowling, and you show up to the bowling alley.
But you just can't.
It's league night. And you can't get on, and you're so pissed off. Like, everyone in the world has had that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, yeah, if you ever have kids, you're just like, oh, let's just go bowling. You can't just randomly go bowling. Like, it's, yeah, because it's always, like, a league or something. Like, no one just has open bowling. So, like, they say, like, they have to have a team, which is great because the running joke is, like, Otto's just trying to win that lobster harmonica through the claw machine. The claw machine is prevalent in this episode. It's like, Homer says, like, he's, like, their fourth member, but then they have to have $500. So he's trying to get $500 to get this bowling team for registries, and I love that he propositions Marge for sex for $500. Like,
she goes, I don't have that kind of money for sex.
Yeah, she's
like she has a budget for it.
Yeah, at first, like, she's like, it's sick, and then she's like, I don't have that kind of money to spend on sex. Like, like she has been.
There's also a good Nancy Kerrigan reference where Mr. Burns, they're set up and he gets hurt, so they're ready to replace him so they can actually win. And Mo goes up to attack him and knocks his knee back in place, so he's good enough to go bowling again. But that's another cultural reference that I only know about basically from osmosis, because that did not happen during my life. Well, I was too young to be aware of it, I guess.
Yeah, and what's amazing is they had, you know, what's interesting is, like, Tanya Harding is more famous than Nancy Kerrigan out of all that. Like, Nancy Kerrigan never, like, I think just had I, Tanya come out last year or the year before, and, you know, I'm trying to think, one of the women in that won an Oscar. I can't think of her name, but tell me, so the listeners are dragging me for that, not to be able to come up with her name. But the episode is really good, with Burns, like, what, it starts off with Burns really good. So Homer's got to go and ask Burns for, like, the $500, he's going to ask him, and he catches Burns where he's, like, huffing ether. And like, has like an ether. He's like
a total Hunter S. Thompson reference of huffing ether.
Yep, and he's huffing the ether, and he sees Homer as like the Pillsbury Doughboy, which is a great gag at the time, and it's funny. I love it because he's like poking him, but it's like poking his stomach. He's like poking him in the eye, and Homer like is great. So he gets the money from Homer, and Homer like runs out and like tells the plant. He's like, oh, if you want to ask Burns or anything, now's the time. Like, he's doped up, and Mole Man walks in there, and he's like, goes to ask for like a new mop, because there's like a new push broom, so there's like no bristles on it. And he thinks he's the Lucky Charms like leprechaun, and he like goes like drill into his head, and like, it's crazy. I forgot like that part like existed in the show, to be honest. I'd wipe that out. They have like full on like graphic sounds and everything. Like, he's drilling into his head. I was like, what is happening right now?
That's like a big thing with The Simpsons, is that you forget which episode certain jokes are from. And then you watch the episode and you're like, wow, I've made references to this for years, not knowing which episode it was in.
Yeah, where he calls Homer popping fresh. You know, he's like, they're popping fresh, and he's poking him. That one always stuck out with me too. But that's the episode where it's from.
Barton Milhouse by an episode of Mad Magazine. Did you read Mad when you were a kid? I definitely did.
Off and on. I was never like so hardcore into it, like where I bought it every time. Like, I waited for the new Mad to come out, but I definitely read my share of Mad. And what sticks out to me, you know, being mostly Spy vs. Spy sticks out, like, from being a kid, obviously. But the puzzles in the middle, which opens it up, I mean, visually remember those. That's what the show opens up with, a joke on that.
I remember all of the parodies. I remember, like, the parody cartoon strips. Those were the ones that I always loved to read when I was a kid. And they also had references to politicians who, like, 8-year-olds would never know. The joke in this one is, who's Spiro Agnew? Oh, he must work there or something. That's the Barton Milhouse joke in this one.
Yeah, I would say Mad at the time, like, I probably maybe got 60% of, like, the references and jokes at the time.
Yeah. This was, and actually another thing that we should probably mention is these episodes used to get crazy ratings. Like, now, like, a 0.2 on the Nielsen scale is good. And, like, some of these episodes were, like, not high on the ratings at all. I'm reading right now. This one had a Nielsen rating of 9.4, which means 9.4% of the TVs that were on at that time were watching this episode of The Simpsons. Like, think about that now. That would be the most insanely popular show, and that, like, Game of Thrones wouldn't get that if it was on cable.
Yeah, and just on regular. The other thing too is, out of all episodes we talked about, like, they've mostly just been A plot driven, and this is an A plot driven episode too. The B plot is pretty decent in this episode too, where the kids have to get the school uniforms,
and then it rains and all the colors go off and there's another riot.
Yeah, it's really good because Skinner has, like, a great moment where, like, the school's, like, in, like, perfect order. Because in Mad Magazine, Bart buys the shirt that says "Down with Homework" and wears it to school, and it starts, like, a riot in the school. That's how it leads to them having to get, you know, uniforms. And I love it. They have the thing where Bart, like, comes home with the uniforms, and he's like, "These uniforms suck." And like, Marge is like, "We don't say that. Like, where'd you know that from?" Like, Homer's on the phone. He's like talking to Mo about the team they just beat in bowling. He's like, "Yeah, the other team just playing sucked. They're the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked." And I always remembered that too as a kid, like, that line, and not being able to figure out, like, just to pinpoint as a kid, like, where it came from. But you'd always say, like, "The suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked." Like, you'd always just pick up on that and say it.
Homer jokes off of the Mad Magazine too, where he's like, "I want pork chops, you clod." another classic Dan Castellan edit. Like, I'm sure that was just an improv too.
Yeah, so good, man. It's in this episode, it really just has a lot of good, just really good, just punchlines and gags like that. Burns ends up, so, like, the short story is, like, Burns figures out, like, he gave Homer the money and, like, is gonna ask for it back, then realize he wants to, like, be on the bowling team. He has the part where he's talking to Homer and has him with a beer, and, like, Homer wants to kick him off the team, and he like drops the ship into Homer's beer, and he's like, "Oh, I lost the nail in your beer," and he's like, "That's leprosy for you."
And we later find out, of course, in The Simpsons that Mr. Burns has every disease ever, and that they're all keeping each other in perfect equilibrium, which is why it makes sense that he has leprosy.
Because this is the one too where they make the joke where he comes to and he's like, 500 checks for bowling, and he's like, "No, sir, that's Smithers is like, "No, that's bowling.
That's your, I haven't felt this bad since my last bowling."
Well, because episode too is the Pin Pals episode. If it's how, like, yeah. I always identified, was it not as Team Home, but it's a Pin Pals episode.
Yeah,
which is really good.
Do you ever wear bowling shirts?
No.
You got to be really into ska to wear bowling shirts, I think.
you are not a bowling shirt guy?
Never a bowling shirt guy.
You were a JNCO jeans guy though, right?
No. See, because by the time I was reaching the age to buy my own clothes and not have my mom buy them for me, skinny jeans were cool.
Okay. Dude, JNCO jeans are so outrageous. That's the most outrageous fad that ever happened.
That was like 1998, where just like massive jeans were cool.
I just didn't know if your skateboarding background led you to the JNCO jeans phase at one point.
Skateboarding led me to wearing like girls' jeans, like jeans so tight that my package had no room to breathe.
No, but yeah, I never did the bowling shirt thing.
So episode number one, and this is probably the best episode of the show ever, I would say. It's one of them. Homer at the Bat. Written by John Swartzwelder, directed by Jim Reardon. It's episode number 52. It is in season 3. This is the baseball episode. This was with all of the guest stars: Don Mattingly, Daryl Strawberry, Wade Boggs, Roger Clemens, Ken Griffey, Steve Sachs, Ozzie Smith, Mike Socia, and of course Jose Canseco, all guest star in this episode.
So how many of these baseball players did you grow up with?
So my dad didn't care about baseball. I didn't learn to care about baseball until maybe high school, and these guys were all gone by then. None of these guys were playing by the time I started watching baseball. Maybe Griffey was still playing.
Griffey had to have been.
Clemens
played forever.
But, you know, I was such a dweeb ass that I read a bunch of books about baseball when I was a kid. So I got to, but it actually left a gap for me. So I know more about like the 1940s Yankees and the 1920s Yankees than I do about 80s baseball, which is where all of these guys are from.
Yeah, it was great. And this had Boggs. Like, Boggs, man, was just, like, such, like, a crazy athlete, man. Like, he's, like, the epitome of, like, a baseball player. You know, John Kruk always has that story where he talks about, you know, sitting next to a lady on a plane, and people come up to him and are asking for his autograph. And she's like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a baseball player. She's like, well, you don't look like an athlete. And he's like, yeah, I'm a baseball player. And Boggs is this dude. It's like Boggs, like, so you like Boggs is just a wild athlete. Like, he was just like a drunk dude. Like, he was small. He just raked. Like, this dude hit, like, I want to say, like, his first like 8 to 9 years, he the lowest he hit was like maybe like 325.
And he's like I know Boggs from being a big poster boy of like the metrics movement in baseball, where no one really appreciated how crazy it was at the time, but his on-base percentage was like, he was like one of the first guys who took a bunch of walks.
Yeah, obviously, like, talks about the Wade Boggs eye was like a thing that like you still like will hear reference to. But he had like really no power. I mean, I mean, the most home runs he might have hit in a season was maybe like 9 or 10, but he hit like 330 every year for like until like he got a little bit older.
Oh, he definitely did steroids 1 year. I'm looking at his fan graphs right now. So in 1987, he hit 24 home runs. He only ever touched double digits one time after that in 94 for the Yankees.
He's the first player to hit a home run for his 3,000th hit, and he was like they think they still were the Devil Rays when he did it.
They were in 98. 98-99, his career on base percentage was .415.
So, do you know like the background of him too? He was one of like the most superstitious athletes ever. Like, he ate like a chicken before the game, chicken for every game. There's like that Always Sunny episode where they reference on a cross country trip, like he drank like
he drank like an insane amount of beer.
And he claims it was over 100, like personally, but like if you drank 100 beers, would you remember you drank 100 beers? Like the number?
Only if you're Wade Boggs, I guess.
Yeah, only if you're Wade Boggs. So Boggs and all these guys really stuck out to me, just like how crazy he was at the time, because even as a kid, like, because like Canseco and McGuire at the time, like that was like when athletes started to shift in baseball. Like Bo Jackson was starting to get big and like they started to look like athletes. But Boggs was like this dude that like you would run into like that worked at Walmart and was like this just awesome baseball player. He's the one that stuck out the most for me because he was just such a unique dude too. Ozzie Smith was real popular too, because, you know, he was always the dude that would come out and do the backflips and be popular.
A lot of the guys from this episode said they only ever got recognized in public from doing this episode. Probably not Griffey, but like Mike Socia and Steve Sachs, like when they got stopped in public, it was probably because of this.
Yeah, I believe it. I read a thing that Canseco said, like, he, like, was against, like, what they originally wrote for him. They're going to make him
out to be like a jerk. So on the commentary for this episode, the producers say eight of these guys were great to work with. And then the guy that rhymes with Rose Manseco was a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, and you get that too when you see how Canseco's later life went.
Right, yeah. Now he's like, you only ever see him on Twitter when he says like the worst possible thing.
His bit where he can't go to the game is good though. I don't know. I think I like it more than what they said originally. So the original bit was he was supposed to be just like wake up with Mrs. Krabappel and miss the game, but I kind of like his bit more where he has to run into the house and save everything, and like he like brings the dryer out and the woman's like, no, dryer goes here, and he's like still running in and like getting their whole house out of the fire. I think that bit plays a lot better than what they originally were going to do, though.
And Ozzie Smith, he's just permanently stuck in the Springfield mystery spot.
Yeah, so we didn't really set up like what this show, like the whole like how we even get to this point, because you know everyone obviously remembers it for like the baseball stars being on, but the so it's like there's the Springfield power plant, like they have the, you know, all the different, you know, plants have like a softball league. It's not even the plants, it's like basically every different institution, because they play the cop in the beginning. And Homer makes his own like Wonder Boy bat, which is play off the natural. And
the natural Wonder
bat. He's just like crushing all these home runs and like beer league softball. And they make the championship game, and it's against the Shelbyville plant. And Burns makes a bet with the Shelbyville plant, the guy who runs the salvage plant, for $1 million. And I love it because Burns is like, I'm going to get all these ringers. And every player he names is dead. Like Smithers is like,
Mordecai, Three Fingers Brown, and Honus Wagner.
He's like, all these guys are dead. He's like, in fact, your right fielder's been dead for 130 years. So he has to get all these baseball players in the MLB at the time. And like, they're going to the game. And he's like, this is a shoe. And he's the easiest $100 I ever met, Smithers. And he's like, unless my 9 all-stars, all fall victim to 9 separate misfortunes. He's like, aren't able to play tomorrow. He's like, that can never happen. He's like, 3 misfortunes, that's possible. 7, maybe. He's like, there's an outside chance, but 9? No way that happens.
And then the only one that plays is Strawberry. And then we see the game is tied 42-42. And then he wants to sub Strawberry off for Homer. And he says he's playing the percentages as he is Joe left-handed batter. Yeah, and we get Mattingly who gets kicked off the team for having sideburns, and then he walks off and says, I still like him more than Steinbrenner.
it's a great gag throughout the show because he doesn't have the sideburns. He ends up shaving like half of his head to get rid of them. I'm trying to think of who else is it that's Sacks, like, what happens to Sax? Oh, he gets arrested. He gets pulled over and arrested by like
for every unsolved murder in New York City.
Yeah. Clemens is like hypnotized into thinking he's a chicken.
Ken Griffey Jr. develops gigantism after overdosing on the tonic given to him by Burns.
Yeah, that's a good bit. The Socia's whole dynamic is a really good bit throughout the show too. So like Socia, so they all have to go to work at the power plant and get jobs.
Yeah.
And Socia's like not even there to play softball. Like he wants to work at the plant. And there's like a part where he's like walking through the plant with Carl with like this big like wheelbarrow full of like radioactive like sludge. And he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, I kind of like this as a change of pace for baseball, you know, or everything. All my mistakes are like highlighted that you make in the field in front of everyone. And he like spills the sludge and Carl's just like, don't worry about it. Cool.
Happens all the time.
But it turns out like he has like radioactive poisoning and can't play. That's like his thing.
I hope that this episode of the show inspires people who haven't seen these episodes in 20 years to go watch them. Or if you've never watched the show, what would you say, where would you start if you were telling someone who's never watched the show to go watch it?
I mean, I think definitely like going back and watching the episodes as adult, like it really starts to pick up in that early mid season two and get going, and like so you might as well just start at 1 and watch that transition of characters. But then like I said, all the way through, still that prime of when all you just think of like everyone that worked on that show, like guys like Brad Bird and what they've done, you know, their
I mean Greg Daniels, the writer of like the primary writer of The Office, who everyone loves that show. He worked on The Simpsons before,
and you know, so just the coaching tree, if you want to call it, so to speak, of media now that we consume, of people that came from that show through that era is just so strong, and those episodes are so strong. And there's a reason why that show is still going, you know, 30 years later. I mean, obviously, I fell off for, like, different reasons, and obviously there's, like, a decline in the show, and people tell you there's a decline in the show. I just, like, basically hit, like, my peak of the show was just throughout my youth, and when I hit, like, being, like, 16, 17, 18, where, like, you know, I got a car, and, like, social life became something, and, like, I just wasn't home. There was no DVR at the time, so I would just wasn't around, you know, to watch the episodes. I kind of just naturally fell out, like, through that era.
Right.
I don't really have, like, a standalone moment where I said, like, man, the Simpsons are bad, I'm out. It's just I hit, like, I was just really synonymous. My age was just really linked up to where, like, it fell off and where my naturally in my life, like, started to just do other things instead of be home on Sunday at 8 o'clock. You know, and after watching football, you know, football games, I was working, you know, because, you know, when you have your first jobs, you have to work those shitty weekends.
You're working, you know, 7 to 3 in the morning on a Friday and a Saturday.
Yeah. The 30-year-old mom with, like, with kids, she gets the weekends off, man. Yeah. You're the one working. But yeah, I would say run through them. I know that they're on Vudu. You can watch them. I mean, obviously on YouTube.
If you just have a cable login in general, you can watch them on FXX.com. You can get every Simpsons episode ever.
Yeah, so definitely just run through that gambit. It might just be because they're special to me, but I think that's definitely what most people would suggest as, like, the prime arc of the show.
Yeah. All right, Rich, tell people where to find you.
I mean, I'm at Roto World, you know, at Lord Reeves on Twitter. A little more active now at the Combine. We're starting moving downhill on the season. But it was nice, you know, take a break, you know, because I shut off, you know, at this point in the off season, and I come back and really ramp up. So we'll have some free agency content starting next week and stuff like that. Really just looking forward to the draft and seeing where these prospects end up.
All right, there we go. Everyone follow him at Lord Reeves on Twitter. And if you guys like this episode, let me know, and we will try and do some more pop culture centered episodes over the rest of the course of the off season.